Welcome to our first attempt at a podcast called Faith and Hustle. My name is Garrett Baker.
I'm Brian Hollingsworth.
And I'm Sean Bryan.
And we're going to figure this thing out.
One step at a time.
One step at a time. Jayhawks or Wildcats?
Oh, there's only one answer for that one.
And I know it.
My alma mater's K-State. Okay. So, yep. Wildcat. Actually, my oldest is getting ready to go to K-State here in about 3 weeks, so we're keeping on the tradition.
So I have a confession, man. There was a time where Kansas State disappointed me so much. Like, I'm a Notre Dame fan. Like, I love Notre Dame, but the Michael Bishop era and all that. Like, when man, that team was so talented. And they would always blow this one game that it just broke my heart for them. Because they're the underdogs, man. Like, there's nothing in Manhattan, Kansas except for that, right?
Not well, these days, it is not the same school of what it was or the same town when I went to school 20 years ago. They brought in the big federal research facility now for IBATH or something like that, where they do a lot of agricultural, biological weapon research and stuff, or defense, I should say, biological defense research. And so that brought in a big job. And then the Army base, Fort Riley, is 15 miles away.
Okay.
And they brought the Big Red 1 artillery unit back and housed them out of Fort Riley again. So that brought a huge wave of people. So Manhattan has probably doubled in size from 20 years ago when I was there.
Really?
Their football stadium is, oh boy. My daughter was looking to play soccer down there, my second daughter. So we went down there to some camps last summer. I haven't been to the football stadium in years. And I pulled up and, man, it was like a castle.
Yeah.
And Sean, I don't know what time you were in Manhattan.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You know, we're LSU people here, right? And what does LSU hold now?
104.
It's 100. Over 100,000. And I think it was at 96,000 20 years ago when I went to K-State football game and got to see Sproles play. You know, it was bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. But I remember, yeah, we're going to go. It's going to be a sold-out game. I forgot who they were playing, but it's going to be sold out. And you've never experienced anything like this in your life. I got there and it was like 40,000 people in the stands. I'm like, we have high schools this big, you know? And, you know, I was just laughing. I was like, you really need to come to Death Valley.
So it was Schneider that started that, yes. So
yeah, there's a reason Schneider came back after Michael Bishop.
Yeah. No, but the thing that I really admire about that program though, is that there's this family first, mantra that they live by, like you don't do anything to disrespect the family. Like kids will take themselves out of the game if they make an emotional bonehead play. Like you'll never see a Vontaze Burfict over there, because like, the rest of the team will check them. It's a good culture. Yeah, it's a really cool culture.
Good culture.
They over the last, I think, 3 or 4 years, they raised it was like $126 or $136 million was generated for the athletics program, and they've put in a brand new practice facility. They upgraded the football stadium, brand new baseball stadium, brand new soccer fields. They got an Olympic training facility out there now. I mean, it is unbelievable what they've done to that facility. It's incredible.
It's amazing what a few wins will do for your finances.
Yeah, and if you're wanting to recruit, I mean, football's where the money's at, right? Nobody really cares about soccer, baseball, volleyball. You know, the reality is football's, from a sports standpoint, that's what generates revenue. And they've spared no expense to try to set themselves up for the next decade.
Yeah, it's awesome. Awesome. I like the football talk, if you're cool with it. Kind of lets us know who we are.
Absolutely.
We wanted to get you on our Faith and Hustle podcast for two reasons. One, you're a hustler, and you've worked hard and to get where you're at, from my experience. So to those people that are listening, we've brought on Sean Wilcott. He lives in Kansas, and he's going to tell us all about it. But he's a owns a brewery and is running for House of Representatives for the state of Kansas. And we wanted to give him an opportunity to talk about his entrepreneurial background, what it took to get there, and then also just give him time to let us know who he is and share that. So that's important. The other thing is we want you to share this podcast in your local area so that we can increase listeners, because we're real selfish about this. And so, so if you're listening from Kansas, I personally, my parents are from Kansas, and nepotism is wonderful. Sean married my cousin. So we've known each other for probably 25 years, huh? Long time. And we've hunted together, and I brought shrimp up there one year. We boiled shrimp, you know. They've come down here. We've had a lot of time over the years, and I really respect him. And I hope everybody listening really can get something from this, from not just educational, but get to know who Sean Wilcott is.
Well, I appreciate that introduction. You know, we have gone back many years and had a lot of great times. So I was excited when you reached out. You know, I've subscribed to you guys. Every one of your podcasts so far, every episode has been great. I've really enjoyed those. So when you reached out, I was real excited at the opportunity to come on here. And I wouldn't say it's a good example to follow, because there's plenty of stumbling blocks here. But I'd love to share the story of where I am, how I got here, and where I'm looking to go tomorrow, type of thing.
Yeah. So when you started this, I guess my first memory of Wilcott Brewing before it was Wilcott Brewing was you had a refrigerator in your garage in Houlton, Kansas, and I think you had a homemade brewing station, and you were practicing the recipe. If I remember, that's my memory of it. So
that's exactly right. So I started as a home brewer. If you would have gone back to probably 2005, 2006 area, I was a U.S. domestic light beer drinker only, to be frank and honest. And
so we're talking Budweiser.
Bud Light was the beer of choice back then. And I got a Mr. Beer kit for Christmas. And so I took that and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. So I ended up, it was a little extract kit. So you have the syrup, no formal education whatsoever. Made a batch. Super excited to try it. I go to drink it. It was a Canadian lager. I go to drink it. And man, it was absolutely horrible. I had to pour it. I couldn't drink any of it. So poured it all out. But it was fun. So I went back down to the local Dillard's at the time down in Topeka. They used to sell the kits. So I went down, bought another kit of it, and came back and made a batch, and still couldn't drink it. But it was unique. And then from that, I jumped right into all grain. Again, I didn't know what I was doing. So I bought an old keg off of Craigslist and cut the top off. Took my turkey fryer and decided to boil water and threw grain in it. Use my wife's kitchen strainer to strain the grain out, which all those that are thinking of getting into all grain brewing, don't do it this way, because it doesn't work. Scooped all the grain out, threw the grain to the chickens, and got no, I mean, it was, that wasn't even worth putting the yeast in. But there's a homebrew shop in Topeka. So I went back down there and got talking to the owner and became somewhat friends, pretty good acquaintances with him, and bought some books, and I started reading about it. And so then I started modifying my equipment, bought another keg, cut the top off of it, and went to a two-vessel system and started fabricating my equipment. I'd make a batch, and over the, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth batch, yeah, I can start cooling this down and drinking a little bit. Still wasn't great, but I just loved making the process and then modifying the equipment. And in the early years, actually, the equipment modification and fabrication was more fun to me than the actual brewing was. It was just that constant build, constant tweak. And then over the multiple years there, it got to the point in time where I had a system and I had a knack down to where it was working pretty well. And your memories of the old 1960s refrigerator with the tap cut out of the front was spot on. You know, I used to keep one keg on draft right there and a second one right behind it cooled. And I got to a point where I was brewing a couple times a week, and then I was giving away 90% of what I was making. I just loved the process and really enjoyed it. Had an opportunity in my life, went to work for Anheuser-Busch out in St. Louis. So we packed up. My background's actually in engineering. So
I was going to ask that. Like, when you, at a certain point, I think he told me.
Yeah, Garrett, but feel free to ask questions. It is a podcast.
I have a terrible memory. So I was like, this dude has to be an engineer. He's way smarter than me. Like, because I did the same thing. I got one of those Mr. Beer kits for Christmas, and I never, like, I'm not patient. I have zero patience. So I kept like burping it and opening it and like tasting it throughout the process. And it was just way too fizzy for me. And I dumped it all down the sink, but I wasn't like, hey, I want to accept this challenge. I'd rather just go to the store and buy it. But I'm glad that you accepted the challenge.
I don't like losing. I'm stubborn. You know, the Wilcott family is very, very stubborn. So when we lose, you don't want to lose a second time. So, it was a lot of fun. You just have to go through that process of make a batch. And if it isn't any good, find out why it wasn't good and try again.
Yeah.
I'm mechanical engineering is my degree, but I really got all that fabrication from growing up on a small hobby farm. You know, as a kid, I used to always tweak and modify. When I was a freshman or sophomore in high school, I bought my first welder and then started tinkering around the farm. My dad had an old stick welder, and it was a hobby farm, so we could never afford any good equipment. So it was all old, used equipment. If something broke, you couldn't pay somebody to fix it. You just fixed it.
Yeah.
And so constant tweaking, modifying, shop classes through high school. Ended up buying my own welder, built a smoker, a trailer smoker, and sold it when I went off to college. So I always had the tinkering nerve in me from a young age.
So how did you transition from the refrigerator to Wilcott Brewing and a tap room?
So we were in St. Louis, and I'll be honest with you, AB was a phenomenal company. I loved the job I had there. Great people to work for. Was part of some really, really cool projects. But we got to the point in time where we had kids now, they were young, and St. Louis really wasn't an area that we wanted to raise our family. And coming from Holton, Kansas, which is a town of 3,200, which is the largest town in our county, you know, where the county seat, you go from that to St. Louis proper, and that's a pretty different culture to be raising your family in. And we looked at other opportunities to relocate, but settled down and said, you know, we want to move back home. So I gave up AB and we relocated back here to Holton. And I went and took a job at a pet food company at that time. So that was a little different from a beer company to a pet food company.
Yeah. So you're back feeding chickens again, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. came back. And went back to home brewing. You know, I took all my equipment to St. Louis with me. I brewed in the garage out there. And from a taste panel standpoint, I'll tell you, all my buddies back here in Kansas as part of my taste panel. And then I go to St. Louis. My taste panel was Anheuser-Busch's taste panel out of their corporate office. So I got some really good notes taken from that one. But came back, and it was still just a hobby. Eventually, I leaned into Jen, my wife, and convinced her. I said, you know, let's take a look at maybe taking this hobby to the next level a little bit. You know, I'm giving away 90% of it. It seems to be doing okay. And we found an old historical building in our downtown community, and I convinced her to help me take the leap and jump into it. So we bought this dilapidated building that really should have been condemned and dozed over. And I spent the next 5.5 years totally renovating it.
Yeah. And let me interrupt you there, because Garrett, I don't think I've shared this with you, but I got invited to go to the grand opening and in Leavenworth. So we drove up to Leavenworth for the grand opening of, you're talking about the dilapidated building was in Leavenworth?
Both of them.
Okay. I restored
three buildings.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm thinking about the Leavenworth building. And when he says he spent time getting it ready to go, we got there for the grand opening at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. We spent the night in Kansas City and drove over. And we went and bought a sink for them because they didn't have a sink yet. And the grand opening was at night. And so we're like doing plumbing and stuff. And I'm telling you, an hour before it's ready to go, my dad looked at me and said, there's no way they're going to be open. And it looked like, I'm telling you, it looked like a pile of fire ants on a dead possum. There was family come in from everywhere, friends. I couldn't believe it. And we were an hour from the grand opening. There's sawdust on the floor. They're hanging light fixtures, running plumbing lines, and hey, it opened on time. So I mean, I wanted to kind of add that in. From the Leavenworth side, from my experience, it was absolutely phenomenal. It looked like one of those TV shows where they renovate, you know, an apartment complex or a restaurant in 3 days. And, you know, that last minute, and I lived it. It was impressive. It was really impressive. But I kind of wanted to throw that in there because you say you took 5 years to get the Holton one going. How long did it take to get the Leavenworth from Holton? I know I cut ahead of you here.
No, that's all right. Yeah, the Holton project was a two-stager. So we got the first one done in 5.5 years to renovate that building. And then it took me about six or seven months to get Holton's tap room done. Then fast forward about a year when we bought the Leavenworth building. And that construction, let's see, we took possession July 1, and we had our grand opening on January 28th. January 28th. So it was about a seven-month renovation for Leavenworth building as well. And that building also, so all three of the buildings we rehabbed probably should have been condemned and dozed over, to be frank. And Sean, you're spot on. The never would have been possible without help. And Holton, you're really going to laugh about this one. When Jen and I opened the Holton tap room, it was Leavenworth on steroids. I mean, it was, I kid, we didn't have siding on the building the night before.
So the whole town came out?
We had people, I didn't even know who they were. They saw us working under lights out on the front porch, and they showed up and just started climbing scaffolding and started hanging siding together because they knew the guy that was out hanging siding. Wow. I mean, it was incredible on how that was. And I'm back to that stubborn thing. You know, I put a flag in the sand 6 weeks in advance and said, this is going to be the day. And both Holton and Leavenworth had the experience. I literally slept on site for the last week.
Wow.
I would work through. My brother, I don't know if you've met Peter or not, my youngest brother helped me, and both of them actually, but when we were doing Holton, we worked until like 4 a.m. building the bar, and this was 2 days before in advance. We go upstairs. I give him the sofa to sleep on. Well, Peter's 6'4". And so the sofa, he's crunched up because there's only probably 5'10" on it, you know. And I'm sleeping on the conference room table upstairs of the brewery. Get done at 3 or 4 a.m, wake back up at 6. We go back downstairs and hit it again. And I mean, it was that way for the last week of both of those projects.
It's incredible. It was incredible. So I don't want to pull away from you, but we're going to be talking about goal setting in a podcast, and it might be a month or 6 weeks out. Before we get into it, just what it takes, those components are, you have to have a clear goal, and you have to tell people about it. You have to define the goal. What do I want to get done? And you have to put a date on it. Otherwise it's just a dream. But I've also heard it said many times that a goal properly set is 80% completed. And it sounds like you've done an excellent job with planning and goal setting and rallying people around you. So that's really cool that you're able to bring communities together and complete a project for yourself, but you're also serving the community. So that's pretty impressive. Transitioning from a refrigerator, Christmas present, brewing kit, home brewing kit, and tons of failures to a tap room to a second location. Is there anything special going on now? Anything new, any changes happening?
We ended up through this process. Part of the whole model of why did I get into a tap room? My original business model was 100% distribution. I wasn't even going to have a tap room. I couldn't even legally have a tap room when I opened my first one in Holton. I had to go through the process of petitioning the county to put it on the ballot so they could vote to change the law to allow me to sell beer on site. So when I originally picked Holton, it was all going to be distribution. Well, as we get ready to open, just the stars align, the building next to us comes up for sale. It was literally being condemned. We buy it at an auction. We renovate that. So that process, we get up and run with the tap room. In Kansas, we are one of the few states still left where the liquor laws required us to utilize a third-party middleman who would sell our product to retailers. And what that means is the restaurant down the street from my brewery that wants to buy my beer, I have to sell it to a third party, and they'll mark it up, and then they choose if they want to sell it to the next one or not. And so what was happening was that that middleman wasn't offering our products, and when they don't have the opportunity to offer that product, I can't sell it. So our sales were nosediving in a territory. So you can
sell it at the bar in a glass, but you can't sell it in a grocery store in a can.
I can put it in a can or a bottle, but I can't sell it to the grocery store.
No direct.
Okay.
Yeah. No B2B. Yep. It was through a third party.
Through a third party distributor is what the law was written as.
So Garrett's got a little distribution experience.
Yeah, I got a lot of distribution.
Did you have to use third party when you were?
I did, to insulate myself from the consumers, but. Oh, good. So, no, but honestly, when you first started off, how many people did you employ locally?
Starting off, it was me.
Just you.
I mean, it was just me. And then shortly into it, so I was still working full time. Okay. I still had a full time job. It was a project manager for a large company. So I was still working 50 plus hours a week full time, coming back home and trying to do this in the evenings. So shortly after starting and opening, I did hire a part time guy to come in and help brew.
Okay.
So he would start brewing, and then we'd have a lot of folks that were volunteering to help package and bottle. And then as we expanded into the tap room, then we ramped up, and I think we hired, I don't know, maybe six or so part-time employees.
How many people do you employ currently, though?
Currently, from between the two locations, we are probably somewhere in the tune of 14 or 15. They're all part-time. 14 or 15 folks right now.
Okay. No. So like, did you have that in mind though, as well, to impact the community that way, to in a positive way, create gainful employment and all that other stuff?
Absolutely. So I could spend the next 4 hours talking about how I have to pivot. I mean, it was from birth until today. From 2015 was when we bought our first building to today.
So you're what, 9 years?
9 years, and I could walk you through each time the model had to change because the path we were on, for whatever reason, and they're totally different reasons, but whatever path we're on, we have to change and divert.
Yeah.
So the original business model, I wanted to have a packaging brewery in Holton, and I wanted to have six full-time employees rocking and rolling, and then contracting out to a local marketing company to do help with marketing and another local company. So I had all these visions and dreams, and we're not even close to where I had a vision on day one.
Okay. So you were able to pivot, and you just didn't get frustrated and well, there was probably some frustration, and you probably broke some things and threw some. You're an engineer. Y'all get honorary.
He couldn't drink his own beer.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't give up. Yeah. It was so bad he couldn't drink his own beer.
So what led you to go from doing what you're doing and finding success to wanting to run for office?
So that goes back to that three-tier system, actually. So we ended up in our business model, we got to the point in time where our third-party distributors, literally our distribution volume was next to zero. I think the last month that we had activity, they sold 3 kegs in a month. And my business model was 50% distribution. So can you imagine not generating 50% of your design revenue?
Yes.
So what we ended up doing was I started looking around and calling other breweries in Kansas and saying, who else do you guys use? And the feedback started coming back of, hey, I'm in the same boat as you. I'm in the same boat as you. And so I thought that was wrong. You know, I've got customers that want to buy my product. I have a cooler full of product, and I can't get it to them because the third party would much rather offer another big label brand versus mine.
Yeah.
This last year and last December, I went down and reached out to my local legislator and said, hey, this is wrong. I want to change the law to where I have the opportunity to sell my own product. And ultimately, long story short, about 40 breweries joined me in the effort. And then I went down to the Capitol, spent about 20 days at the Capitol this last year, and spearheaded the initiative to where we were successful. We changed the law, and now effective last Monday, actually, I've been able to sell my own product directly to that retailer. I no longer have to use a third-party middleman.
What do you think about that?
That's awesome. No, that's yeah.
Change the law.
No,
that's cool stuff.
Be the change. Don't ask for change. Be the change. No, that's really cool. So has that increased? Like, well, you only have 1 month of metrics, but that's increased your sales or anything like that?
So that kind of, well, I'll come back to the initiative of why I want to run for office, and that experience down at the Capitol has really been my motivation. I've never wanted to get involved with politics, and we'll probably talk about the political one here in a couple minutes, so I'll spare the details for the moment. But because of my decision to engage at the political level, I've actually made a conscious decision to put what I fought for and what I led a team for, I've chosen to put that on hold to build the foundation for the political side.
Okay.
I know nobody can see it, but you guys can.
Yeah.
Tuesday, I put my product in a can. Very first time.
I like that.
And being able to take your product and put it into a can to where you can sell it to retail was an unbelievably awesome feeling.
Yeah.
And actually, that beer itself is 100% Kansas-grown grain. So not only am I looking to have my own business, it's very important to me. I'm paying about a 25% premium for the ingredients, but I feel very strongly of trying to support our local agriculture. So I'm working with two different farmers, and 100% of the grain in that can came from Kansas.
So a six-pack of yours goes for 30% more than a six-pack of Bud Light?
Any more. So up here, typical market for craft, you're going to pay anywhere from $10 to $12 a six pack for an average ABV, 5-6% beer. If you're going to buy a six pack of Bud Light, Blue Moon, something like that, you're going to be paying somewhere between that $8 and $10.
So really, I mean, I don't see that being a blocker. I think the only thing that you could do to make it better would be to get Kid Rock to shoot it with an AR-15 or not shoot it with an AR-15. Either way, I don't think it matters.
Have Kid Rock taste and go, man, that's really good beer.
Yeah. No, that's
Kid Rock, come on, join us. Yeah.
No, that's like that really, that whole, that's inspiring, because that's something that I believe in is supporting local people. And I mean, I know that we're in Louisiana, but if your beer was in Louisiana, I would buy it just because, now I know you, right? So I'm biased. But, and I think that you should support the people that are around you in your network or in your circle. So, that's really, because that the basis of everything is community, right? If you don't have your community, or if you don't support your community, or if you don't have your community's best interest at heart, like you're going to fail eventually. You'll get burnt out on money. Money's not important. So I see that you're long-sighted in terms of like what you're trying to do. And that's really neat. So you went up there and you were like, hey, I'm in this room with guys that I thought were smarter than me, but they're not smarter than me. Is that what happened?
Oh no, they were still way smarter than me. I guarantee you that.
How humble are you, really?
Yeah.
No, I am not a very intelligent individual. I am a very stubborn individual.
Yeah. Well, no, but there was something that you said that is the most important part of leadership to me, is that when you said you had no intention of getting into politics, you didn't think you should and all that. Those are the guys that are supposed to be the leaders in the room, is the guys that don't have those intentions and don't want the power. You know what I mean? You're not seeking power. You're seeking leadership. You're actually taking on a burden. So I respect that. Like, And there's tons of people that need to be ousted and not, you know, politically.
Yeah, and
they want the power.
I think without us getting on one political side or the other from this viewpoint, my understanding of the founding fathers and a few generations beyond that was they left successful businesses and served their country and then returned to whatever they did. It was a service to their country. They weren't doing it for the sake of income and building a political career. It was a service to their community and their country. And it sounds like I'm hearing some of that with what you're saying here, with what you've done. It probably cost you to go and lobby this at the state for 20 days. It probably had, you probably had a personal cost involved with that. I don't think that you made any money that, you know, buying a hotel room for 20 nights. Probably was not a big financial paycheck with that one.
There was a lot of zeros on it, but there was no other numbers. I'm fortunate enough. I'm about 25 miles from the Capitol, so I never have a hotel. But every day I was down there, I wasn't at my business operating. And Jen will tell you how many nights. I have a really bad habit of working until 1 or 2 or 3 in the morning, and then being so tired, I just fall asleep in the office, up at the office at the brewery, and then wake up at 4 or 5 or 6, whatever it is, and then just keep working. So through that issue, I still spend a lot of nights at the brewery, sending emails to the industry, trying to align the industry, contacting legislators. There was a commitment. When I made the commitment to go down this path, I saw that I needed to put everything I could into it to make it happen.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. Well, let's talk about the campaign. Let's talk about what, tell us, because we're from Louisiana. You know, we've got this French law down here. Our world's different. I mean, we're in the same country, but we are in a different state, and we have a similar but different situation. So what's the platform? Tell us about it. What are you running for? Let's see if we can get G-Bake over here to vote for you.
Elevator pitch. No.
Yeah. Introduce yourself to us, because I mean, there's no shame in saying it. This podcast is, we're on 5 continents now. Yeah. They're listening to us in Bogota and in India and Mumbai. And hey, there's one person in Brussels. I mean, I don't know. He likes us. If you're listening, we see you, man. It's awesome. So, we're all over. But tell your local people and tell the world, who you are, what you stand for, and what you're running for.
So Kansas, the way our structure is very similar to what the overall United States. So you've got your governor, then you've got your judicial branch, so you've got all the courts, and then you've got your legislative side. And so on the legislative side, in Kansas, we have 2 houses. We have a Senate, and then we have a House of Representatives. And each of those kind of has their own little function. But what I got motivated for was the House of Representatives up here. And kind of that, back to that inspiration question, I never had a political motivation my whole life. I've never been involved with politics. I've never held a public office. And if you would have asked me on February 1st of this year, when I was in the heart of fighting the issue, I would have told you that time I never had a desire. I don't want to run for office. Somewhere through that process and seeing the experience, and having the success of actually passing the law, somewhere in mid-April, I started to have a kind of a desire or a calling. And I don't want to say calling, because that's pretty cheesy, but something in me was telling me.
It's okay to say calling. You're on the right podcast to say calling.
And it was, you know, sometimes you have things happen and you don't know why, right? You know, it's, why do I want to do this? I'm what I just fought for 6 months, I just put on hold. The first day it's available, I just put it on hold because I'm out campaigning instead. I made the decision. I made the commitment that this is what I want to do. Why would I fight to just put it on hold? So something in me is I'm very faithful. So I prayed about it a lot. Talked to a lot of other business owners about, hey, I'm having this idea. My wife was hugely influential. We're very close, and talked to her and back and forth on that, and talked to a number of legislators. You know, when you spend 6 months down there, or 4 months, really, I was down there for about 4 months. I engaged with about 70 legislators through that effort, talked to them, and one of them, he had a saying, and I'm going to butcher this, so I'm horrible at quotes, but he said something along the lines of, Sean, all it takes for evil to prevail is good men to do nothing. Mm. And that saying stuck with me, and that really started playing a lot of thoughts in my head, and that was my inspiration for running. So the House of Representatives up here, it's a two-year term. It's a general vote for your district. Up here, I think my district that I would be covering is about 2.5 counties. And Sean, you probably know, I think a county is similar to a parish down there where you guys are at.
A county is similar to 49 other states. We're the only ones that have parishes. I mean, it's...
I like it.
It's original. Yeah. But yes, I'm sorry. We digress.
So it covers a territory, and I'm up in a rural area. So it's about 2.5 counties would be the district that I would be representing. And House of Representatives, you basically go down and you discuss, debate, engage with other legislators from around the seat to make sure that your constituents in your area are being represented when a law is being changed, modified, or your taxes, your rate of your tax, all that kind of stuff. And so it can be part of a law change that affects education. It could be part of a law change that affects alcohol laws. It could be roads and bridges funding, all the above. And so that is really the role of that I'm signed up to campaign and run for.
It's incredible. So you have a really good understanding of it. And from your perspective, I do want to ask you some pretty hard questions coming up, but so give you a little time to warm up for that. But you're essentially going to take the will of the people in your local community, and you're going to represent them and fight for them. And how are you going to go about knowing what the people want you to fight for if you're elected?
So one is transparency right out of the gate. And if I could go talk to every single person, you'd do that, but you can't, right? And technology is awesome because now you have a very easy and quick means to communicate with individuals. I've never campaigned before, I'll be honest with you. When I made the decision to do this, I had no idea what I was signing up for. If you guys haven't campaigned yet, it's literally going door to door to people in your district and people two counties away. And knocking on their cold calling, knocking on their door at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning or a Tuesday afternoon at 2. And hi, my name's John Wilcott. Engaging with them. Transparency of who you are. I am classify myself as a traditional conservative, registered Republican. And I don't know how political you guys get, but Republican can mean about 7 different things these days, it seems like. It doesn't necessarily align with the traditional values. So, family is the core foundation. I think it's the foundation of society, not only for today, but that's really what brings what tomorrow will be. And a lot of things factor to that family foundation. I'm a huge believer in the right to life. And the right to life, I'm going to hit on some really hot topics. And that's probably good because I think I should be 100% transparent with people on where I stand,
Yeah. And right now with the way that the states are set up, you could have some influence on Kansas's decision on whether abortion or is legal, not illegal I don't want to get into the details of it, but is that a true statement? There would be potentially some influence there because it's left over to the states now.
It is open to the states. Kansas recently had it actually go through our legislature and ended up on the general ballot a couple years back. And the bulk of the state passed actually and said abortion should be legal. I personally disagree with that. I don't think that was the right decision. But I mean, that could be a topic that comes down the line. Honestly, I don't think that will be a topic that we'll see much activity on, just to be frank with it. I mean, it just came off a general ballot, but I want people to know where I stand on those topics so they can get a better idea of who I am and what my characters and values are.
What is the most pressing issue locally that you want to go in and I guess initiate change with? Like, what is?
So one thing I saw at this last year, being down there and engaging with so many legislators, are, you know, microbrewery bills affected a fraction of a percent, right? And healthcare, roads and bridges, education, you go down the list and you got all these topics that are hugely important. And one thing that I saw is there is no legislator that can be an expert in every single one of those. And so finding somebody that can come in where I think I would have a more experience with than some others is that small business side. You know, I've been doing a small business. I've been raising a family with my wife in a rural community. So where I think I would bring more value to would be maybe that connection or that personal experience in past with how do taxes affect the small guy? You know, how are some of the burdens and regulations that are put in place that make me sell my product to a third party and they don't want to change the law because now it gives them competition type of thing. So I think probably where I would bring the most value to that area is in that small business tax burden hurdle aspect of things.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, for sure, you've blood, sweat, tears in your business and going from, and I can identify with this, working the job to building a business simultaneously. But to me, I mean, how you got there matters. Somebody's got to get there. Somebody's got to do it. But how you got there is pretty critical to this to me. It doesn't make sense to not be able to sell your beer in a can or directly to a grocery store when you can sell it directly to a consumer that walks into your bar. It makes my head hurt thinking about it. It doesn't make sense to me. And I experienced that in some other worlds. I did some electrical background, electrical work. I have a fishing boat that operates in foreign territory. And there's some really unique laws. And specifically in Mexico, one of the things they do is you can't own a permit to take people and swim with whale sharks on a tour unless you're 51% Mexican national. Respect that. They're taking care of their local people. But then there's some other stuff that's just out of the box crazy. Like, where did this come from? And so you know there's some outside influence affecting this. And to hear you say that in your world, you want to affect that, and you did that, and you made a change, it makes sense. It does make logical sense to where if something is happening in another area that's not, maybe not a microbrewery, but another area completely, whether it's a farmer, a plumber, electrician, whatever, doctor, lawyer, you could have some influence and fight for them because you have some of those bumps, you have some of those bruises, and you have some of those stories to tell because you've been doing it for nine years actively, and Lord knows how many years ahead of that trying to prepare. Yeah. So definitely draw some real comparison from what you've been through and the ability to apply it to others. So I respect that completely.
I agree. Well, to me personally, I believe that entrepreneurship is that's the bread and butter and the backbone of the United States of America. Doesn't matter what state you're in, it's the small business owners that I mean, when America was America, right, that you would go down Main Street, you know, and all those people that owned those businesses were local people. And the corporatization of America and like we subsidize farmers, we do all this other stuff, and we buy things from abroad. And I mean, I think it's cool to have a small business owner that's willing to put his money where his mouth is and take that leap to represent his people, to maybe nurture and encourage more entrepreneurship in your town and in your region, you know? So I think that's cool. I think that's really neat. because we got to keep this thing going.
That's right, bro.
We can't be Rome.
We're at the mark, right? We can't burn. It's like next year we're supposed to burn, right?
Yeah.
No, we got to stop that. Okay. Before you give us your shameless pitch on how we can contact you, how people can support you, we're going to ask those questions. Garrett, you got a moment to think about a hard question, but I got one for you. You're a man of faith. You believe in God, and you sell beer, and you sell beer. Justify that, because there's going to be somebody going, he sells beer. Like, I don't get it. How can he love God and sell beer? And he's contributing to the delinquency of minors and alcoholism. And I know this is a hard question, but I'm giving you an opportunity to throw it out there. And I want you to explain to me what your thoughts are on that.
So I grew up, alcohol has been around and legal my whole life. So for me, it's one of those topics.
And look, I'm going to interrupt you real quick. You didn't just grow up around it, but I get a little inside track. Was it your grandfather had the first license after Prohibition? Is that the story?
No, he didn't have the first. He had one of the
one
first
of the license. First. Okay, okay.
For a liquor store.
It's your story. You tell it however you want to.
His big milestone. He actually ended up suing the state of Kansas because back when he had his liquor store. The state of Kansas wouldn't allow liquor stores to sell chilled beer. And anybody that makes beer knows that beer should be kept cold from a preservation standpoint. And so he gathered a bunch of liquor stores at the time, and they sued the state of Kansas, and Kansas turned around and countersued all of them. And everybody else backed out except for Grandpa. So he ended up taking the state to court head on. Ended up winning, and so at that time he had the opportunity to sell his beer cold from that day forward.
So this is a generational story. Yeah. I'm sorry, I just knew we were backstory on that. We were deer hunting years ago, and I picked up that little tidbit and never forgot it. This is like a generational conversation here. So anyway, I'm sorry. Let's go back. Tell me about it. Tell me about how this works. How do you go to church on Sunday morning and sell beer on Saturday night?
Well, the old cliche, I was born and raised Catholic, we used to sell beer at the kids' soccer games at the Catholic schools. So, jokes aside, it's something that I've grown up around and I am faithful. I was born and raised Catholic. I still practice. I would like to consider myself a strong Catholic, but that's not for me to judge. I do what I can and I'll let the good Lord judge whether I'm good or not. Alcohol is one of those things. It's like any vice out there, right? And so I think it's my personal, if I consume alcohol, if I have the beer, here's the beer that I made and I have it. If I have that product and I'm enjoying that, is that wrong? And I don't think it is until I take it too far. And that self-control is the part that I am personally responsible for. It's not Sean, you are responsible for making sure I have self-control. It's me.
I have self-control issues with Krispy Kreme. I really struggle with Krispy Kreme and, Cracker Barrel when those chicken and dumplings come out.
Yeah, I have self-control issues with a whole lot of foods.
The second side of that, or the flip side of that coin, is I should not be forcing it upon you. If this product is here, I should not be taking my beer. And we do in our tap rooms. If we see people that are getting to the point in time where we think that they're a little too far, where they failed on that self-control, we'll cut them off. We'll call them a taxi. I've driven people home before. And so I think the safety and the acceptance around that is not the acceptance side. I think the responsibility side of that is just as critical. Or even more so than the access side. I make the product, I make it available to people, and if they want to consume it, then, I think it's pretty good. I'm a little biased, but I think it's pretty good.
Well, it sounds like freedom to me.
Yeah. No. Difficult question. What is your stance on, bipartisan? Would you do what's best for your constituents in spite of yourself?
So I think there's core principles that I can't separate myself from. Yeah. And there's few of those, right? One of them is that abortion topic.
Yeah.
I believe life begins at conception. So that particular topic, even if my constituents said, hey, we don't think life begins at conception. We think it begins when the baby takes a breath. I will not be able to consciously be able to vote that one.
Yeah.
Then you have some other aspects of things. You have beliefs around small business, for example. I believe as a small business, I should have the freedoms and the rights to be able to flourish and to thrive as my business, and I should be able to die and fail based on my own actions as well. And really, the government shouldn't be there to put burdens and hurdles in my way to be able to achieve that. That's my core belief. Now, if my constituents said, hey, we think that third tier, that third-party middleman should be in place for XYZ reasons, even though that's against my beliefs, even though I disagree with them on that topic, that's one that I would have to fall back with my constituents on. Even though I disagree with it, it's hurting my business, I think I have to fall back on that one because it falls under the principles around small business and community. It's not a core value, if you will.
Yeah.
And so those are the ones where I think our system in place we have today, both in Kansas and at the national level, I think the system is so critical to our success today and our success in the future. The checks and balances we have, and it is meant to keep people from taking my personal views and forcing them upon you without somebody else checking that, right? I think doing my part is to represent my district as long as it fits in that moral value.
Okay.
So Garrett, I know this man. Yeah. I know him. You don't know him.
No, I'm just meeting him.
Would you vote for him?
I would. Cause I can see him while he's speaking. You know,
why? What about this conversation draws you to? Now look, I'm gonna say if Garrett didn't want to vote for you, he'd say, I probably would vote for this guy.
Yeah, man.
But he said yes. So
no, just transparency.
Yeah, transparency.
I mean so the fact that he has a hill to die on, but at the same time he would give up this right here. To me, that's what politics. He's a statesman. He's not a politician, right? So like when I'm looking at candidates, I'm looking for statesmen. I'm not looking for a politician. I'm not looking for a specific party. I'm looking for the characteristics of a man that I feel is fit to lead, and I feel that he's fit to lead.
Well, I appreciate that.
Sean, as we start to wrap up here, we got a couple minutes left. Is there anything that you would like to add to this conversation? Is there a talking point? Is there a theme that you're experiencing with people you talk to, interact with? Is there anything else that we're what question are we not asking that we should for the listener?
Well, you know, I'll default out of this one and say I'm not a politician. I've never done this before. I've never studied it. I don't know what to do. So I really can't give you the answer of, hey, you know, that from a political standpoint, this is what, you know, people should be asking or doing. The one thing I would throw out, both at the state level and where I'm at in the race, and the national level, I mean, we're getting ready to go into an election season right now, and I think we all know how hot and how contentious this political environment is these days. And people should be doing their homework. You know, the bipartisan thing is so true. And that's actually one of my motivations. That was another one of my personal big drivers on the motivational side is through this experience, what I saw down in Topeka when I was fighting for our law change, was legislators who are purposely taking a position simply because somebody from the other party took a position as well. And it has nothing to do with the topic. I was talking to a legislator who said on our particular bill, he said, Sean, you guys are going to have this thing passed with flying colors. This is not even going to be a question, but your opposition's too strong. They won't let it go to vote, meaning the lobbyists that were fighting against us. They're not going to let it go to vote. And we were fortunate enough, we had other legislators that thought very strongly that we had a pro-small business, anti-regulation. And it passed 118-3 in the House, and it passed 37-2 in the Senate.
Yeah, because it just makes sense. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's just like, this is like a common sense thing.
And so what, so what I would encourage people to do is do your homework on who you're wanting to vote for, or who you're interested in voting for, whether it's at the federal level, at the state level, or even your, probably even more importantly, at your local county commissioner level. Because people that interact, you know, my interactions I've had, so I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to knock on doors right now. I've spent the last 3 days knocking on doors, introducing myself, and I've got 180 seconds. You know, I got 3 minutes I'm talking to somebody. They don't know who I am. They're not going to know who I am when I leave. They're not going to know my core moral values. I try to present it as fast as I can, but I try to be respectful of their time too. So what I would encourage people to do is do your homework. Know who you're voting for. Don't look at the letter. Don't look at an R or a D or an I. Try to understand who you are. And what I've found personally is the far majority of people that I vote for have one of those letters behind, a specific letter behind their name, but that's not why I'm voting for them. It's because you do the homework and the bulk of your thoughts and values align more closely with that individual. But not always. You know, I've voted for every single one of those letters in my life at one point or another. And I think that's the way it should be as well. I don't think we should align as I'm a Republican, so you need to vote for me. It should be, here's my moral values. Here's how I think things should operate. Here's how I operate. And if you agree with those, then that's how people should be voting. So educate yourself would be my biggest ask, really, of anybody who's willing to go to the polls to vote.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. So we're sharing this podcast on multiple platforms, and we can truly say that it's international, national and international. We're in majority of the states now. We've got listeners, and like I said, we've 5 continents. And so wherever you're at, we're speaking specifically to America, and we're talking about small town Kansas, but voting is a privilege that we have in America. And if you don't vote, you're not taking advantage of that opportunity. If you do, you're taking advantage of an opportunity that some places don't have. And so if you're listening abroad and you don't have that opportunity, you know, this is something that we do have. And hopefully this gave you some insight into how our process works. If you've never been a part of the political process, it's like betting on your favorite football team, but actually being able to influence the result. And so at least you can lay your head down at night knowing that you had a responsibility to your community as a voter, as a taxpaying voter in our country. It's truly a privilege for our freedom. But at the same time, you did hit on a few things that I really liked hearing. One is you're stubborn, but I would kind of change that to committed.
Yeah.
Not to correct you, but just to adjust that. Yeah, you're stubborn. I mean, you're being humble saying that, and you know, I get that. But you're committed to a goal, and I want to go all the way back to the beginning of this podcast. My personal experience was showing up and watching you. Look, I am a hard driving person, but being an hour out, watching where y'all were on that grand opening, man, I was questioning, like, are we going to pull this off? And it came together because you did not give up and you did not stop fighting, and people rallied around you, and that's leadership. And, you know, and we're being a little selfish here in this, but our podcast is Faith Hustle, and you have those things. You have a strong faith. You have the strong hustle work ethic, and you don't just work for the sake of work, but you do it with some intelligence and some planning, and that's highly respectable.
And integrity, you know, like that's one of the most important aspects of being a hustler and having faith is that integrity. Yeah, I could tell that you're the type of guy that, like, you're the same guy when no one's around, right? You know, it's not just all smoke and mirrors. Any man that will sleep on a conference table for a week straight, you know, is a different breed. Because a lot of people would have gave up. A lot of people would have threw it in. A lot of people would have quit. So that part of your hustle, I admire it. You know, I need to, right now, at this moment, I need to go sleep on the conference table for a week because I got something to build.
And I'll give you one little thing that's required for that that I didn't hit on enough, and that is your spouse. I may have been the guy swinging the hammer, and I may have been the guy sleeping on the conference room, but my wife is dedicated more and sacrificed more than I ever did. She's there for me every minute, every moment. She took care of the kids when I wasn't able, or the decisions that we chose, I was not present to be there for a lot of the things that I should have been. And her dedication and support is absolutely critical for anything that you want to achieve. Is find that partner and that spouse that's going to be there with you, because you're going to hit times when you question your decisions and you're like, man, I didn't sign up for this one. Yeah. You talked about plans earlier. You know that you can set a goal and you can set a timeline, but I guarantee you, no plan has ever been executed flawlessly and achieved the end goal. That plans change all the time, and having that other person with you is, in my opinion, probably the single most critical thing behind having your faith in God to help keep you pointed in the right direction. That'd be my other bit of advice, is make sure you find somebody that you're going to be able to partner up with as equals before you go sleeping on that conference room table.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really good stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, look, let's wrap it up. What am I missing? Who, what, when, where? Who, what, when, where, how do we vote for you? How do we get you elected? Because Kansas needs you. What do we do? How do we support you?
So in our district, you got to be a resident of our district to vote for me. It's not statewide, so it's going to be a very small area. It's only about 22,000 residents in my territory. And early voting starts July 17th, and it goes August 6th as a primary. And I'm going to be running in a primary against two other Republicans. So whoever wins that one, there is no challenger at the general election. So I need to get out and vote before August 6th if you're a resident in northeast Kansas. That's that. If you got questions, man, campaign email address is Sean, which is sean.wilcott, W-I-L-L-C-O-T-T, @gmail.com. Fire in questions, fire in advice. I'd be the first person to tell you I don't know what I'm doing. So I will read every single email and go through those and respond if there's questions and share my beliefs on stuff. And that'd be the best way to get a hold of me. I got a Facebook page. Back to that partner aspect of things. She brings to the table way smarter than me on that one. So I can't tell you how to get it. Just find Sean Wilcott for Kansas. I know that much. Search that in Facebook. You'll see me.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, we're going to do what we can to get this podcast out for you to be able to share it in your area and, use it as you see fit. We're super grateful to have interviewed you. Garrett's got big eyes over here. Looks like you enjoyed it.
No, I did. I did. It was really cool. I'm so used to Louisiana, you know, we just vote early and vote often. That's how we get our people.
Yeah. Whoever brought you a sack of crawfish gets your vote.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And so politics down here is a little bit different. So, no, it's really interesting to learn, and it was really interesting to have this interaction, this dialogue. And I think that's what more statesmen need to start doing, is having these open dialogues on these types of forums with just regular dudes hashing things out, you know, in that way. Because you're going to get regular guy questions, and you're going to give a regular guy answer. And that's what impressed me the most, is you didn't put on any airs. And yeah, so I got your back. I'll send a text message. I have some family in Kansas, actually. But
really?
Yeah. But I'm not 100% sure where. I think they're in Topeka. So yeah, I do.
Well, you know, this is all good, but the only thing that really matters is are you a Jayhawk fan or a Wildcat fan?
I'm a Wildcat fan. That's my alma mater. So daughter's going to school there as well. And yes, I'm big time purple in our household.
Do you watch? Do you watch Kansas State baseball?
I'm not a baseball fan. I'll watch basketball. I'll watch football.
Okay.
Well, I say watch. Over the last 5 years, I don't watch probably an hour of TV a week. So,
yeah. one of my dear friends, his son's playing baseball at Kansas State right now. His last name is Quick. Cool. Yeah. So that's really neat. That's a cool connection.
Yeah, and they're doing good this year. I did see some. They made it pretty good in the tournament this year.
Yeah. So
cool stuff.
Well, guys, I want to say thanks to you guys. You know, your podcast, I subscribe to it here and listen to your guys' first, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 of them. And, man, they are awesome. I've really enjoyed them. I've shared them to a number of folks. And I want to say thanks to you guys for extending the invitation, because I've awesome podcast. You guys are going to be going a long ways with this. You guys got some good stuff. So I appreciate your guys' hospitality by inviting me on.
Yeah, we appreciate it. We appreciate it. And so, you know, we're going to wrap it up here. If you're listening, like it, share it, follow it, do what you can. Our goal is to learn ourselves primarily and to be very selfish. Our goal is just personal therapy right here. Garrett walked in the other day and said, hey, time for our therapy session. But we're going to do our best to share a little knowledge, maybe drop a little bit of wisdom. And realistically, we're gaining a lot of wisdom from people we interview. So thank you. Thank you for being here. And have a great, great day. Have a great campaign. And wish you luck.
And you're welcome to send a little package of those cans down here so we could taste it for you.
Yeah. I've been promising a trip to come down and say hi to family for I don't know how many months. So when I ultimately do, I'll make sure I bring some samples.
Yeah, okay. Bring the pickup truck. Yeah. A pallet. Garrett said, bring it. If you didn't load it with the forklift, it doesn't count. We'll send you home with some crawfish.
That's right.
And some squirrels or something.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Best of luck to you.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, and before we go, if anybody has an idea, if we struck a chord with anybody about a topic that you may want us to discuss, feel free to comment in below and just let us know. We'd love to have your feedback.